This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, a judge sides with Bell over V Media. TELUS rolls out a program to help low-income families, and most Canadians will be buying Christmas gifts from Canadian retailers online. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast. The Canadian Tech Podcast is sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. Olio are the planners, designers, and developers of the apps used by some of Canada's biggest brands. Find out what Olio can do for you at oliodigitallabs.com.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 96 for Sunday, November 27th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
And I'm sick this week, so I'm going to give everyone fair warning in advance. You might hear me hacking like a smoker or sneezing or something. I've got whatever's going around, Derek, I tell you. And I hate being sick.
It's all right. It's all right, old yeller. I've got my shotgun. We're going to head on back to the shed there, and we're going to take care of you.
I don't know what that would do for your political career.
I'll deal with the ramifications later. That's okay.
You'll deal with it? Okay. See, I'm so sick I even forgot to mention we're sponsored by Olio Digital Labs.
Oh, wow. So, at least you got it in now.
At least I got it in. So we have a few news items. We're going to do this until we're either finished the show or I drop dead. So let's get started. We had the CEO of VMedia on a couple of weeks ago, and they were going to court. Alas, the Ontario court sided with Bell in their dispute. Why don't you tell us about it, Derek?
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened. However, the judge did leave the door open for the CRTC to weigh in. So let's recap a little bit. Back in September, V Media launched a Roku app, and Roku delivered service over the public internet to essentially emulate the same service they're normally delivering over their own internet connection, which a lot of other internet service providers offer now. IPTV, IP over the internet, or TV over the internet. But this was different in the sense that you didn't need to pay V Media for an internet connection. Bell got all up in arms over it. Only Bell, even though Rogers could have and Chorus could have. But regardless, only Bell did, saying that it was a clear copyright violation. V Media, in between a cease and desist letter coming and the court case, pulled Bell's channels off of the skinny basic over the public internet service, just to show some good faith. And unfortunately, Justice Fred Meyers last week ruled that V Media was violating or was overstepping the bounds that their BDU license gave them, and ordered V Media to stop offering the Roku service. He did say repeatedly that it will ultimately be up to the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, better known as the CRTC, to set broadcasting policy, and, quote, asking V Media's lawyers, why are you here instead of there? They're referring to the CRTC during the hearing. So, you know, he's got a decent point, but regardless, I think V Media obviously felt like they were in a position where their existing license and copyright law allowed them to do this, especially only a year or two after Bell, Rogers, and TELUS all argued in front of the Supreme Court that they shouldn't need to pay TV stations to pick up over-the-air transmissions and rebroadcast them. So a little bit of a little wishy-washiness here in the law, seemingly. But regardless, Bell got V Media to pay for their costs, $150,000, and and we're gonna need to get some sort of amendment here to the Copyright Act, because apparently there's an interpretation here of the word "only" that really messed things up for V Media. There's a separate category for internet broadcasting by defining new media transmitters as those whose broadcasts are lawful only because of a special exemption from the CRTC. So I was
We'll have to wait
disappointed.
and see what happens. Yeah, I know you were as well, and so was I. We'll have to wait and see. Obviously, I think the CRTC is going to be getting involved in this, so I don't think the story's over yet.
No, hopefully not.
Okay, moving on. Out west, Telus is launching an Internet for Good program to support 15,000 Alberta families. As they say, lack of access to affordable internet. Telus, they're the latest company. Now, Rogers does something similar as well. They've launched the Internet for Good program to provide low-cost internet to single-parent families receiving financial assistance through Alberta Works Income Support and Assured Income for the Severely Handicap program. So basically the same as Ontario Works and ODSP. Mm-hmm. It's going to offer $9.95 internet service to 15,000 single parent families, and will reach download speeds of 25 meg and are capped at 350 gig of data per month. An equivalent plan with a 300 gig cap comes at $73 per month at full retail price. So basically, yeah, they're basically saying, they say in the news release, internet access is so important now. It's like a utility, whether it's to, you know, connect for online learning, applying for jobs, stuff like that. So they're also partnering with the Alberta Computers for Schools to provide families with need of a computer with a refurbished desktop or laptop. So, you know, this is a good thing. Rogers, as I said, does something similar. They do a Connect for Success program in Ontario, New Brunswick, and Newfoundland. So mm-hmm. I think this is a good idea. You know, this is a good initiative.
It's a very good idea. We will happily give kudos to companies like Rogers and Telus for doing good things like this. And so thank you very much. And I'm sure that the 15,000 families, as long as they can afford that extra 10 bucks a month, will certainly appreciate a highly discounted, but still fast, still performant, with a decent cap, internet service where they otherwise were probably paying four times this for something, you know, something smaller, something slower, if they have something right now. So even if they are already, they already have an internet service provider, an internet connection, this should significantly cut their costs.
Exactly. Okay, now we're going to pause here with a word from our sponsor.
Hi folks, Derek breaking in here with an ad for our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. Do you have an idea for a mobile app, a problem that needs solving, or disparate pieces of software that need to speak to each other? The team at Olio Digital Labs is here to help. Olio are the planners, designers, and builders behind the solutions used by some of Canada's biggest brands, and they can also help you. Olio offers custom mobile and web applications, websites, and platforms. To find out how Olio can help you, call 226-785-0420, email derek@oliodigitallabs.com, or visit oliodigitallabs.com to learn more about the company and its services. And now, back to the show.
And we're back. This weekend, or this weekend past, is known as Black Friday, Cyber Monday, where we have all the usual stories about fights in Walmart and stuff like that. But more and more people are finally getting smart and not leaving their house to risk life and limb, literally, if you've heard some stories in the States. Apparently, a study from PayPal and Ipsos Reid did a holiday gifts online, and I'm going to sneeze. Pardon me. Isn't that good? Buying holiday gifts online from Canadian retailers instead of buying from international or U.S. websites. Of those people, 43% are planning to buy more gifts from Canadian retailers. Now, I think part of that's definitely because a lot of Canadian retailers now, they've really bumped up their website presence. Yeah. I noticed the Bay has a pretty good site now, some stuff like that. And apparently shopping local is now officially in vogue. More than half of Canadians revealing they plan to shop online from Canadian retailers because they want to support local business and the economy. They want to shop online from domestic because they want to avoid the cost of international shipping, taxes, duties, 51%. And here's the one I think should actually be higher, unfavorable exchange rates. It's only 44%. Yeah. Any comments on this?
Man, I was shopping local way before it was cool. Like, I've always tried
to... Well, that's because you're a cool guy.
Well... Thank you, Stuart. But I've always tried to spend my money here. Of course, I go shopping in the States every once in a while, just like everybody. But that is literally probably a once a year thing. Whereas the only thing I bought internationally recently was the very lovely Blue Yeti microphone. And that was still shipped from Amazon's Mississauga warehouse. Yep. So not, I thankfully didn't have to cross the border. So it got here the next day, which I will talk about later.
I know.
That was nuts. But anyway, no, this is great. You're right. Joe Fresh, which is owned by Loblaws. They sell clothing. My wife and I just bought a few things there on Thursday. And amazingly, it came today. The Canada Post delivery, like our, I think he's a contractor. He's not actually a mailman, but
they do contracts on those odd days.
Well, and then just because it's out here, like he has his own he uses his own car, and but like literally, it was delivered via Canada Post today, which I thought was really amazing because I certainly wasn't expecting it today. I was expecting it on Tuesday, and B, it's Sunday. Like what? When does Canada Post deliver Sunday? So I don't know if it's a temporary thing or not, but I was really happy because I got brand new workout shorts to wear tonight. So it's been great. It's you have local stores in London who have much better online presences than they did a few years ago. Uber Cool Stuff comes to mind as one that has that uses Shopify. Which is Ottawa, based in Ottawa, so also Canadian. So all that money gets to stay here unless it's, you know, something they're selling you something shipped from overseas. But regardless, it's great. And that's a big part of it. You gotta make it easy for customers to buy your stuff. If you don't, that's when you lose customers to other stores, to chain stores, to international stores, and so on.
Yeah, exactly. And there is something about being able to shop from the comfort of your jammies.
If
you're everyone else is like fighting.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. I was going to make a joke about maybe wearing less than pajamas, but, you know. And I just did.
Yeah, no. You just did. There you go. Okay, well, in the States, definitely shopping season's in full swing. According to data from Adobe, I don't know how Adobe has this, but anyway.
They Black Friday bought an analytics company a few years ago.
Did they? Yeah. Ah, okay. Black Friday brought in nearly $500 million by 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, on pace to reach $3 billion by the end of the day, a growth of more than 11% over last year. Mobile shopping accounts for 57% of visits this year and 40% of sales, both new records. Thanksgiving, and even earlier, Thanksgiving Day, they had $1.93 billion, 11% year-over-year growth. It's... you know, everything's up. A lot of more people are doing it. Apparently, many products this year had steeper discounts than last, especially in techs. For example, video consoles are 12% more discounted, while TVs are down 15%. Mm-hmm. So that was based on aggregated data from 22 billion visits to retail websites. That's pretty, those are some huge numbers.
That is a huge number. So I find two things really interesting here. One, mobile shopping accounts for 57% of visits, but only 40% of sales. To me, that would suggest that while shopping online has gotten really good, the checkout process is not. And I would say one big reason for that would be who wants to punch in their 16-digit credit card number pecking away on your screen as opposed to, you know, a laptop or a desktop. So, and I could absolutely foresee a situation where if you have an account with Amazon or Best Buy or Joe Fresh or Loblaw's website or what have you, or Uber Cool Stuff, is signing into your account, filling up your cart, and then going to your laptop or desktop to actually finish the order. My wife and I actually shopped in tandem using her account on Old Navy's website Friday. And And because she had an account, she had actually signed in. So I signed in, we shared her session.
Right.
And so I would like refresh the cart and she'd be like, oh, I made some changes. So I'd refresh the cart and there's her changes and vice versa. So that was kind of funny. But, you know, I could foresee a situation where that's happening or just people getting frustrated and be like, oh, this checkout sucks. I'm just going to go buy it on my laptop. I actually found it incredibly frustrating and rather presumptuous that companies like Amazon were unveiling new Black Friday deals every 5 minutes. I'm not camping out on your website.
I know,
all day.
They think people are going to. I know.
And you know what? So I'm sure there are people who did. There are probably thousands of people who did. But thank goodness I'm not one of them. I'm way too busy for that. And I don't have the patience. I'm not going to just camp out on Amazon's website and watch new deals be revealed throughout the day. I got better things to do.
Well, there you go. But yeah, there's people down there. They shop till they drop. It's crazy.
Oh, up here too.
Absolutely crazy.
Oh, I mean, Black Friday is like a full-on thing now up here, and so is Cyber Monday. Even the UK is like Black Friday crazy now. And
it gets people out. People think they're getting a deal.
Yeah,
not always.
I mean, it sucks from
for hours about that.
Yeah, it sucks from like a mind share thing. Like all week, Black Friday week, Real Canadian Superstore had Black Friday week. Every day was a different deal. Again, I'm not paying attention to that. I don't have time for that. It was like 40% off clothing this day, 30% off, I don't know, cookware the next day. I was like, good for you. I'm not.
Yeah, but there's people that, you know, you go to sites like redflagdeals.com and places like that. Yeah. There's people that follow that stuff.
Well, at the very least, Canadian Tire's website lets you sign up and they will let you know when something goes on sale. I like that. I'd like it if more stores did that. But anyway, we'll move on.
Even the Steam store had a Black Friday sale because I got an email saying something on my wish list was on sale. So that's nice when they do that.
Yes, it is.
Exactly. Okay, moving on to an opinion piece and called Apple Just Handed Microsoft the Keys to the Kingdom. I'm including this basically because since the new MacBook Pro announcements and stuff like that, I'm seeing more and more of these comments and these columns in this direction. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people, especially in light of the Microsoft event happened the day before, and they had some pretty amazing hardware we've talked about. But more importantly, a lot of people are thinking, what really am I getting in this laptop I'm having to pay hundreds, if not thousands, more for? And is it truly a pro thing? So, it was more just a sample of one I found, but I found it quite interesting. And, myself, I have to admit, I don't have the money yet to look for something to replace my old one. But if I was in this position, I'd be giving it some serious thought. Apple's done a lot of, in my opinion, silly things lately, from killing off Aperture and some of these new models coming in. They're really, it's almost like they're trying to say, okay, we want to push out this so we can just sell phones.
Yeah.
I'm really starting to wonder. So, that's why I included this. It's worth the read. And there's some similar, the author here cites a lot of examples and other people's tweets about it. So, interesting points here. Again, myself, I've said before, if I had the money today and both my gaming Windows PC and my MacBook died, I'd probably be looking at some sort of high-end Windows laptop.
Ditto. That's just me. No, I absolutely agree. I know I'm really hard on Apple sometimes, and there are a lot of reasons for that. But here's a quick quote to show, I think, a general consensus of a lot of people who are looking at the Apple Pro or Apple MacBook Pro and thinking, can I actually use this? Quote, it's not for photographers who quickly offload pictures from SD cards or writers who need a comfortable keyboard. It's not for business people who plug into TVs and projectors to show off their PowerPoint, or Keynote for that matter, or video editors who need a lot of graphical muscle. End quote. The thing about Keynote was me. But that's exactly it. There's still no touchscreen. You can't use a pen or stylus or anything like that. And I've heard a lot of people say that after they've started using a Windows 10 laptop with a touchscreen keyboard or a Chromebook with a touchscreen keyboard, no, you don't use the touchscreen every day, all day. But for those, there are a lot of moments where you do reach out instinctively and touch what's on the screen, especially because we've been using smartphones and tablets for the iPhone is going to be 10 years old next year. So a good 9 years with, you know, good, serious touchscreens. And, you know, you expect it sometimes. Not too often, but I've reached out on my MacBook Pro and tried to touch the screen before. I'm like, oh, see it, done. Like, you know, click that button. Nope, doesn't work. I forgot. Yep. And thankfully, I'm not quite there because I only have mobile devices with touch screens. But my next laptop, personal laptop, will probably be a Chromebook. I really, really like what Google's doing there. Some of the hardware looks fantastic. And I'll go with a Chromebook because ultimately, almost all the software I use can be run online, or there's a Google Chrome extension for it that will replace the functionality. So I don't need a full desktop or laptop computer with like a full-blown OS. Yep. I need access to the internet. Without access to the internet, even my MacBook Pro is practically useless to me unless I'm writing a proposal for, you know, a website or a web application. And even then, I usually have to do some research. So, yeah, and then, of course, Apple now sells 17 different dongles.
Well, exactly.
Because who doesn't love dongles? Who doesn't love, you know, weird, white, silvery things sticking out from their gorgeous $2,000, $2,500 laptop?
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, so this is, like I said, this is what I'm seeing this more and more, and we're really going to have to see what Apple's going to do about it. Because you know, there's a lot of things they could have done. One thing they could have done is like what they did with the iPhone 7, include a USB-C to a USB dongle built in with the laptop. You know, that would have helped a bit. But yeah, there's a lot of people that just, you know, they don't seem to get it. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on this one as well, and we'll see what happens over the next little while.
You certainly
okay.
will.
Okay. Exactly. Last but not least, there was a big Montreal International Game Summit. It's the largest event for video game developers in Canada. It draws about 3,000 people every year. And I'm going to sneeze again. My apologies. Oh, terrible. Oh, sorry. see, this is why
you're
I said.
So
I hate
cute,
being sick.
Stuart.
I know. I get the man cold and everything. I keep asking my wife for the little bell, and she just looks at me.
So, oh, that's when you're supposed to go like, I'm blanking on your wife's name.
Alicia.
Alicia, right. It's like, Alicia.
Yeah.
Alicia, call my mom.
Yeah. My mom wouldn't give me any sympathy either. You've met my mom. Anyway,
Scottish
why don't you
anyway,
kind of cover kind of the takeaways, because I'm about to sneeze here and I'm
trying
to hold it off.
Okay, so who wrote this? Jacob Cerebrin, writing in Tech Vibes, said that he came away with four lessons from Inside the Sessions at MIGS 2016. One, I found this particularly interesting. YouTube and Twitch are starting to impact game design. And his big thing here was that he spoke to a gentleman named Richard Rouse III, who told an audience at a talk on dynamic narratives in games that traditionally a lot of game developers would build their game with the intent of guiding players in a certain direction and making sure everybody had the same experience, more or less. Instead, because people are streaming on Twitch and YouTube while they play, and you want to therefore have a more dynamic experience, that's exactly what game developers or story developers are doing now. They're trying to they're being pushed to make games more dynamic. So obviously things like MMORPGs, which stands for Massively Multiplayer Online Role-Playing Games, those are usually big open-world games, and so that can be fairly dynamic. unless there's a very particular story you need to follow. But we're seeing a lot more like choose your own adventure type situations in a lot of games like that. So that will certainly keep things fresh, keep things different, and give more people a reason to stream their play, and therefore more reason for people to watch those streamers. Two, the indie movement is here to stay. Lots of indie games were on display at MIGS 2016. There were more than 40 local indie publishers showing off their games at the event. In the sessions, is where you're really seeing this sort of influence happening. A lot of the speakers were indie developers who had spent years working on AAA titles, so at big game developers and publishers like 2K Games, EA, Ubisoft, places like that, Midway, Sega, etc. And that includes a bunch of people like the creator of the Assassin's Creed series. He started his own company called Panache Digital Games. Jeff Haddam, who actually I think I've heard of him. He founded Took Games after working at Ubisoft, places like that. And so we don't know what sort of impact long-term that's going to have, but regardless, we've also seen a huge rise, similarly to this, or in tandem with this, rather, of crowdfunded games. And so I think that goes hand in hand. You know, a lot of people are getting sick of working on sequels, essentially. You see that a lot in Hollywood. You see it a lot in video games as well. And they want to do their own thing. So they know that there's this huge untapped, mostly, resource of people who are interested in just playing really cool games, regardless of who makes them. And so they can go to a Kickstarter or Indiegogo and get enough money to at least get to a beta stage and then maybe raise some actual venture capital then.
Right.
Segue, even in indie, it's still about money. So Johan L., he's the COO of Cloudcade, a developer of free-to-play mobile games, said, "If money is not a motivator, I think you're lying to yourself." And certainly, you know, you could have a hit game in the App Store or in the Play Store. Ultimately, you still need to make a living. So certainly making a game that appeals to you is way more fun for you to build and hopefully will appeal to others. That's great. That's all fantastic. But ultimately, you know, unless you're working a full-time job as well, you're going to need to make some money.
Pay the bills.
Yeah. Related to that, there are some new business models emerging, like Double Fine Productions. They're creating micro publishers that publish and promote games from even smaller studios than them. So that's cool. And one of those smaller studios is Montreal's Co-op, KO_OP. And I just realized that written out like that, it kind of looks like a dude with really big eyes or glasses and like something on his ears. They're also becoming micro publishers in their own right. So regardless, they're putting the games out there instead of hoping an Electronic Arts or Ubisoft comes along to pay for the promotion and all that. And regardless, gaming is still a hard industry to work in. Crunch time, quote unquote, is still sending developers on medical leave. Women are still being harassed out of the games industry, and there are still lots of calls to keep politics out of games, quote, as if they don't come out of our lives, Jill Murray said. She's an award-winning writer who worked on several Assassin's Creed games before starting her own company called Disco Globe Interactive. So, yeah, that's certainly true. There are a lot of companies who need to encourage more of their female employees to pitch ideas. Especially when you realize that women like Roberta Williams is the creator of King's Quest. That was a really, really popular set of games when we were younger. Yeah, I was probably 10, 11, 12. Yeah, you would have been in almost in your 20s. So, all points I agree with. I know a few game developers. I've known people who worked at gaming companies. I know a guy who used to work at Mythic Studios underneath EA, and certainly crunch time was a real thing. So, and all these things are true. You can see it from the sidelines, except for point one about streaming impacting game design. I thought that was really interesting. That was new to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of new and new to me as well. So, yeah, made pretty good. Okay, we don't have a local story this week, so stuff we like. It should be pretty obvious. Stuff I like this week, DayQuil and NyQuil meds helping me survive this damn thing. I tell you. Yeah, spell it right for me. as he corrects the show note, because I typed it and it's like,
yeah, it's fine.
My brain is mush, I tell
you. I'm giving you a pass this week.
Yep. And then, of course, Derek, you're sounding particularly clear and awesome tonight.
In a world where two Canadians must deliver factual news on a weekly basis, Derek does his through the new Blue Yeti USB microphone, which he got on a massive discount on at Amazon on Thursday. Doom, doom, doom. It, honestly, so I went, I saw, how did it even... I think I actually looked at an email, like a marketing email from Amazon, and I was like, "Oh,
right.
Oh, the Blue Yeti's on sale, and $99." What I thought was funny was only the Midnight Blue version was on sale for $99. There were all the colors were on sale, but Midnight Blue was on for $99. And then on Friday, it was one of the silver or gray ones that was $99. And I ran it by you, and I was like, you know, that I read some quick reviews, which I've read before, but there's a really awesome Scottish guy who reviews tons and tons and tons of podcast gear. I think it's thepodcastreview.com. So
if
I listen
to it's not Scottish, it's clap. It's a good microphone, you know.
The one from the Quaker instant oatmeal commercial. But it's not oatmeal. What was the one who did those commercials? If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
God.
Okay. We don't have a chat room. I was gonna say chat room, look it up.
Chat room, let us know. If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
I've been watching too much Twit and or listening to too much Twit and DTNS. Yeah.
Well,
but
hopefully
anyway.
Someone will put a comment in the show notes.
Oh, I'll look it up.
Someone
later.
Can put a comment on the blog post.
Yeah, but anyway, I got it running.
So how do you
cardioid.
Like it?
I was listening to myself in the monitor for a portion of the show, and I think that the noise floor. Yeah, no, that's pretty quiet. Mm-hmm. And certainly, yep. I feel like the audio quality is a huge step above what I was personally getting through the Snowball mic. I know you've had a good time with it, and that's fine. I don't want to poo poo it too much,
yep.
But certainly,
no, it's a good entry level mic.
Yeah, and the Yeti is, I feel like, a nice step above. So. Yeah, maybe we'll get another one. I think we might try to use this to record our 100th podcast, if need be, or if we need an extra mic, we'll just bring it along. So,
well, that's good about some of these mics. And, you know, even the Snowball one and that, you can use them in like group sort of things where you have multiple people, and you know, the Blue Yeti has that same thing. So,
exactly. It has omnidirectional, bidirectional, cardioid, which I'm in right now, and one other mode. So. Yeah, it looks pretty too. It was much bigger than I was expecting. I opened up the box and I'm like, wow, this thing is huge.
That's what she said. Exactly.
Hashtag TWSS. Yeah. So
that's right.
Anyway, I'm really happy with
good.
It. It sounds really good. So
awesome.
Thank you, Blue, for making a great thing, and thanks for Amazon for selling it for $84 less than normal on Thursday.
You gotta love it. Okay, so what have I been up to? Again, I've been sick, so not a lot. Going to work, hacking, coughing, taking a day off work, hacking, coughing, work, sleep, get up, repeat. Yeah, there's this latest bug, and I'm sure other people will appreciate. The older you get, it seems like the tougher it is to shake these damn things. So I am starting to feel a little bit better. It's, you know, you're good in the morning, and then as the day goes on, you slowly wear down. So we're recording this at 8 o'clock at night. So yeah, next time I'm sick, we'll do this at like 9 in the morning.
Sure.
Then I'll be bright eyed and pushing. Although I did sleep until 10, so that might be an issue today.
Oh yeah.
Anyway. Wow. and you know, and then there's you've been kind of busy.
This young buck just keeps going and going. So, yeah, I've had a bunch of phone calls and meetings this week with municipal staff, lots of reading to do. I've read, I read 166 pages of all of the agenda for the next council meeting. Thankfully, item number one is, here's Derek, here's his eligibility report, let's swear him in. So that's cool.
You better hope they do that. It's going to be awkward.
It's on the agenda, so it's going to happen. And the eligibility report is in there and reports positively. So, yeah, as of Wednesday at around 4:15 p.m., I will be officially sworn in as Middlesex Center's Ward 4's new counselor. So that'll be cool.
There you go.
We also put up our Christmas lights and tree this weekend. Apparently, my dad bought one of those rotating, spinning projector lights. Well, he bought two, apparently. Bought one for himself. He's like, if you want one, I got it too. And I'm like, why not? Sure. So I've actually got...
aren't you worried about it getting stolen?
I didn't pay for it, so no. I put Christmas lights...
Pretty wild. No, no.
I live on a corner lot, so I put Christmas lights all the way down the fence, like all the way down the one side of the property. It reaches almost to the very back, which is kind of cool. And then I wrapped the pole on my front porch with a smaller set of lights. So that's it. Done. It was like 150 lights, 200 lights. That's enough. And now apparently I've got a projector coming if I want one. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take a free projector. Why not? So there's that techie stuff. I reinstalled Plex media server on my desktop in the basement. That's running Elementary OS, which is based off of Ubuntu/Debian. So that was actually pretty easy. Yep. That was great. And so I'm going to start using that again as a media server for my Roku. I had it running on a Windows server for a little while, but that machine died about a year ago. So
I have mine running on a Windows server, and we use Plex Connect on the Apple TV, and best of all, it's spouse friendly, so that's the most important thing.
Oh, it's mouse friendly. Oh, that's cool.
Spouse friendly. That's okay. All right, so I think that's about it, because my voice is starting to go.
Yeah, and it's 9:02.
And you're starting to mishear me.
No, that's sure. We'll take it at that.
We'll go with that. All right. So don't forget to review us on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever else you get your podcasts. Retweet us. We also have a Facebook page. If you have any ideas for the show, send us an email to contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca. So for episode 96 for Sunday, November 27th, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
And I'm Counselor Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.